Thanks a lot for the invitation. So before starting, I would like to say that you can, of course, interrupt me at any time during my talk if something is not clear. And maybe something else, it's always a bit difficult to have those talk online because you don't see your audience and it's a bit unclear. You don't know if you are talking to yourself or to someone. So if some of you could have their camera open, it's maybe easier for me also to check that I'm not speaking alone. Okay, so today I will talk about quantum theory and the role of complex numbers and real numbers in quantum theory. Actually, I have a more precise title, which is the following, which is a bit long, but maybe which is more explaining what we have proven, which is real number Hilbert space quantum theory with tensor product is experimentally falsifiable. So before going into my talk in the like what we did, I will first ask a naive question, which is the following. So imagine you have Alice, Bob, and Charlie doing some experiment, and you know that Alice and Bob are sharing a state, and Bob and Charlie are sharing a state. And you want to model it, you know that it's a quantum mechanic experiment, you will use C complex numbers, density operators. And then here, the naive question I want to ask is, why complex numbers? Why not real numbers? And what about just replacing complex numbers with real numbers? So this question is might look naive, right? But actually, it was a question which was asked at the very beginning of like quantum mechanics. So for instance, Schrödinger, when he found his equation right after, he sent a letter to Lorentz saying what is unpleasant here and indeed directly to be objected to is the use of complex numbers, psi, so for us rho and sigma, is surely fundamentally a real function. So there is really this question at the very beginning of quantum mechanics. So okay, so maybe the first answer to this naive question is that the question does not really make sense. So if you think a bit, you can see that actually any experiment of quantum mechanics, for instance, like this is described by the statistics you can observe. And usually we understand those statistics as in terms of probabilities, which are real number valued. And then we could imagine that we have a very large book in which we have all the potential probabilities in all the potential experiments in quantum theory. And this book would just contain a real number. It would be a good description of quantum theory, and it's real, right? So here we will ask something a bit different. We'll focus on theories. So in physics, we have more than just explanations, descriptions. We have theories which explains and predicts experiments. So in quantum theory, we have the Born rule, for instance. So we'll ask the question about this more precisely. So before going to quantum theory, I want to talk about all other physical theories. And I think that quantum theory is the first one which was expressed in terms of real numbers. So I have to be a bit more precise, but if you look at like magnetism, electromagnetism, for instance, well, so complex numbers are of course sometimes and quite often used. So if you look at an electromagnetic wave in vacuum, you will describe it with complex numbers like this, of course. However, if you go into the fundamental formalism, the way those wave equations are obtained, you can see that it is obtained from the Maxwell equations, which are in terms of real valued vector field. And here, in order to solve the equation, we use complex numbers, but when we write the formalism and the laws at the very beginning, this is in terms of real number. So somehow in electromagnetism, complex numbers are just used to simplify expressions, calculations. Okay, so now I will go more precisely into what I will call complex number quantum theory, which is the standard quantum theory we use. and real number quantum theory. So complex number quantum theory, I guess it is very clear for everyone, but I just want to fix clearly my axioms. So I will take the standard Hilbert space formalism with tensor product. So to one particle, I will always associate some complex valued Hilbert space, and the state of the system of this particle will each time correspond to some density operator in this Hilbert space, which is positive and traced to one. Sorry, let me take this. Yes. And then, so we will do some measurement over that particle. So measurement operators corresponds again to operators in the same Hilbert space, which has positive, which are projective, and which sum to identity. And then once we do a measurement of some particle in some state with some precise measurement operator, we want the probability of obtaining an output R. This is given by the bond rule. And there is a last rule, which is quite important, which is the two particle rule. So now if you have two independent particles, system S and system T, you want to know with which Hilbert space you should describe the two particles. And this Hilbert space is just the tensor product of each individual particle. And also, if now you prepare two independent states, then the joint state describing the two particle is just the tensor product of the operator corresponding to each preparation. Okay, so this is what I call standard quantum theory, complex number Hilbert space quantum theory with tensor products. And now I want to define what would be real quantum theory. Well, real quantum theory was already introduced before us, of course, and it is just the theory you obtain when you replace C by R. So I just obtain real quantum theory by replacing all C's by R's. Okay. So now the question is, can I find differences between the experimental predictions of real quantum theory and complex quantum theory? So as you will see, the answer to this question is really not obvious. But before going beyond this, what I will deduce is that if there is no way to distinguish between the two theories in an experiment, then I will deduce that complex numbers do not play a fundamental role. So they are very useful to simplify descriptions, computations, but in the end, they are not completely fundamental. And if yes, well, for this formalism, complex numbers are essential. So
to interrupt, but there's a question by Thomas. You're taking questions.
Yeah, of course.
Thanks. I just had a question about this. Could you go back to the slide about real quantum theory, please? Hi. Sorry, my internet's a bit unstable. I'll just need to move quickly. So you say that you know, for real quantum density matrices, you compose the tensor product, but real quantum theory is not tomographically local, right? So the tensor product of the vector spaces of symmetric matrices, right, is not the same as the composite system. So if I have a real like two-dimensional quantum system and another one, they're embedded, you know, in R3, but then the composite is not embedded in the tensor product. So doesn't real vector space quantum theory violate this tensor product assumption because it's not tomographically local?
I take this definition of real quantum theory. So I will go to this. So there is the Stueckelberg formalism, which is not using this tensor product. And well, I will discuss it later.
So, okay, thanks.
But this definition is the one which, well, was introduced in like the literature also, right?
Maybe we can discuss later, yeah.
But we can discuss it later. I think it's clear, what you are saying is clear for me.
Okay.
So before going beyond, and I will exactly discuss that, before like going into the proof, I want to make two important remarks. So a first one, which is exactly what we just discussed, is that there exists alternative formulation of quantum theory with real number. So there is indeed this theory with a universal qubit from Stueckelberg, in which you don't assume this tensor product for two disjoint systems. There is also Bohmian formulation, which you can do with real numbers, and there are a lot of formulations. So those formulations are completely known to be completely equivalent to all predictions of quantum theory. So they will, of course, give the same predictions, but they do not satisfy those axioms I to 4i. Okay. So this is a first important remark. And there is a second important remark, which is that there already exists a lot of arguments to reject real quantum theory. So there is a first obvious one, which is based on dimension. So what you could do is just to say, okay, I will create a photon, and I will look at the polarization of the photon, and I will try to encode some variables. I will look at how many degrees of freedom I have with the polarization of that photon. So it's quite clear that if you use complex number quantum theory, you will have access to 3 degrees of freedom. And if you use real number quantum theory, you will have access to 2 degrees of freedom. So if you make your experiment, you will be able to encode 3 values in your photon, in your polarization, and you will deduce, well, it must be complex quantum theory because I can encode 3 degrees of freedom. But somehow, actually, this is not really testable. To do this, you need to trust your measurement devices. And in practice, if you think a bit at it, when you create some experimental device, you create something which is infinitely dimensional. And when you try to encode those degrees of freedom, nothing tells you a priori that you are not encoding this into maybe the position of the photon, or its direction, or its wavelength. And there is no way to completely trust the experiment you are doing. So all argument based on dimension needs some trust. And here we really want to take a point of view which is device independent, in which you are not trusting what operations, what you are doing in your experiment. And there is another argument rejecting real quantum theory, which is to say that real quantum theory does not satisfy tomography. So when I define real quantum theory with this tensor product, actually there are systems, joint system between Alice and Bob, which cannot be distinct, which are distinct, but which cannot be distinguished doing local tomography. So having Alice and Bob doing some local measurement will not be able to distinguish two different systems. So, well, this is a way to reject real quantum theory, but this is somehow a new axiom you are adding to those axioms I to 4i. And well, first, is this axiom reasonable? It's not so clear, right? Why would you want to assume this local tomography? And somehow also what we will prove is that this axiom is not needed. Okay, so now that I have introduced complex quantum theory and real quantum theory and my question, I will prove that actually you cannot simulate all experiments of complex quantum theory with real quantum theory. And I will go through my proof with some way to look at it, which is a challenge between a complex quantum theory theorist and a real quantum theory experimentalist. So the question is the following. So I will look into this with a game. So the game is the following. I have the theorist who believes in complex numbers quantum theory and who will propose a challenge. So his challenge will just be selecting a state and some measurement operators and computing the probabilities you obtain in that case, and giving this challenge to the experimentalists who will need to simulate exactly the same probabilities. So I want the same probabilities, but now with real number operators. And the goal of the theorist will be to look for a good game. So it's a game in which the real quantum theory experimentalists fail. So actually, this kind of game, we all know it already. This is exactly what we have in Bell games. In Bell games, we have a complex standard quantum theory theorist who is against a local hidden viable model experimentalist. Okay, and then the theorist has a very good challenge, which is the CHSH experiment. So in the CHSH experiment, you have some states, some measurements, you obtain the probability, and you show that CHSH is equal to 2 square root of 2. And then we all know that if the experimentalist tries to reproduce the same, he will not be able to, because he will be limited by CHSH smaller than 2. So this is a good game in which the theorist is able to like find something which is not reproducible by the experimentalist. So I hope the problem is clear for everyone. And let me continue. So now I will go through a lot of potential challenges. And I will first go through a lot of challenges which are achievable by the real quantum theory experimentalists. So first trivial challenge, but important to understand what the experimentalists can do, is the following. It's just a prepare and measure experiment in which I have a state which is sent to a box which measure it. Okay, and I see some probability distribution. So actually, this challenge, there is a very easy way to reproduce the statistics, which is just to encode a description of rho in some classical variable, in some bit string, and just send this bit string to this box, who decodes this classical information, also have a description of what measurement it should perform, and compute with a computer, classical computer, the probability distribution and what should be A. So this works, of course, but I will go to a second simulation, which is more interesting for the following. So the second simulation is the following. The experimentalist will introduce an extra qubit, which is, in particular, two states of this qubit, which are I and minus I. So it's just the eigenvector of poly Y matrix. So it's quite clear that this minus I is just the complex conjugate of I, right? If I conjugate the coordinate, I swap the two. And then the experimentalist will introduce a new density matrix, which is just the classical mixture of rho tensor I plus rho star, the complex conjugate, tensor minus I. And he does the same for the measurement operator. So this is a well-defined matrix, right, operator, which is positive, and it satisfies the axioms. And then if you try to conjugate it, it's quite clear that you will obtain itself, because if you conjugate, you will exchange those two, and you will exchange those two. So you have rho tilde equal rho tilde star. So this is a real operator, and the same for the measurement operators. So, of course, we know how we created this operator, right? So we still think of complex number when we look at this, but if you write it as a matrix, you see that it's only real entries. So this is a valid operator in my real quantum theory. And then also I pretend that, he will obtain exactly the same statistics. And this is not very hard to understand it. So if we take the theorist point of view, remembering how this state was created, we can interpret this measurement of this state with the following. So in this measurement, you first measure this extra qubit, which I call the flag particle. So the flag particle actually will carry the definition of the square root of minus one from the state to the measurement box. So there is this extra flag particle, which is either I or minus I, The measurement operator first measure this flag. If the flag tells the box that the definition of the square root of minus one is plus I, then it applies the standard measurement operator. And if it tells the measurement box that it is minus I, then it applies the conjugated operator. And then, of course, the total probability is just the mixture of this probability and that probability. In this case, I have no conjugation in the Born rule. And in that case, I conjugated both the state and the measurement operator. So I obtain exactly the same probability because the Born rule is stable when I conjugate everything inside the trace. So with this, I obtain the same probability distribution and I obtain a simulation. So again, let me do some pause here. I hope it's clear for everyone because I will use this trick everywhere now. Okay, so now let me go further and try to do something which is a bit more involved. So I will do some CHSH can experiment. So then the question is again, can I find a well-chosen row and well-chosen measurement operator such that it's not simulable? Actually, no, because there is a simulation which is a bit the same. What I will do now, the experimentalist, is just to take two flags, one which will go to Alice and one which will go to Bob. And again, the two flags are either plus I or minus I, and they are correlated. Right, so A and B receive the same flag. And then the measurement operators are the same and it will still work because now there is two flags which are carrying to Alice and to Bob the definition of the square root of minus one and this definition is the same. So when I compute the Born rule, again, I will find the sum of two terms which are the same, one in which I have no conjugation and the second in which I conjugated all operators. Okay, so I can try to go to more complex challenges in which I will have one source going to more parties, but again, the same idea will work, of course. So in order to go further, we need to find something else, right? So first we need to find a way to make this trick of this square root of minus one flag impossible. It's maybe not enough, right? But we'll try to do this. So now I will go to a new case in which this trick is not possible and actually there is no other trick. So for this, I will go to what I call a quantum network. So more, it's an experiment with now two independent sources. So now the theorist will consider an experiment which looks like this. And we'll do an extra assumption. The extra assumption is that the experimentalist will need to simulate this experiment with the same structure. So I ask him to find some rho tilde for rho and some sigma tilde for sigma and the same for the measurement operators, which reproduce the probabilities. And now the question is how to choose the operators for states and measurements such that there is no possible simulation. So let me first give the intuition on why this trick of square root of minus one flag is impossible in that case, cannot work. So actually it's quite intuitive, right? So imagine the experimentalists want to simulate this experiment, an experiment which looks like this with the same trick. So he will first introduce some state rho tilde and some state sigma tilde, which are the flag states like this. And then he will send this to Bob and he has to find a good measurement for Bob. So Bob in my previous measurements was measuring the flag. So let's assume that Bob is again measuring the flags. Well, if he measures the flag now, he's receiving two flags, right? One from rho and one from sigma. And well, the two flag might be the same, in which case it's fine because Alice and Bob will have the same definition for the square root of minus one and all will be fine. But actually half of the time, the flag won't be the same, right? So rho tilde will maybe send I and sigma tilde minus I. And in this case, it's quite annoying because Alice and Charlie will have different definition for the square root of minus one. So one will conjugate her measurement operator, one will not do it. And this will cause some problems. And if we select appropriate measurement operators, we'll witness this by measuring the post-measured state between Alice and Charlie after Bob did his measurement. So, of course, I only looked at this trick of square root of minus one flag, okay? But I have not proven at all that there is no alternative trick. So we could imagine somehow, so, for instance, that Bob, they are doing this flag trick, but Bob, instead of first measuring the flag of Alice and Bob, he performs some entangled measurement of the flags, or he could also introduce some entanglement between the flag and the other measurement operators, or something tricky like this. Or actually, they could simply not use this flag trick and go to some extra particle of some infinite dimension, which would simulate something else. Okay. And okay, well, maybe there are also other techniques, right? But actually, we proved that nothing works. And the way we did it is to find a well-chosen experiment in that case, in that scenario, in which we can prove that first, the flag strategy is the only possible one. So there must be somewhere a flag of dimension 2, et cetera, for the states. And we also show that there is no way to introduce those entangled measurements in order to reproduce the statistics. And in order to do this, we combined two works. So actually, we are using self-testing. So I will not go into the details, but I have some. Sorry, there is a question.
Yes, just before moving on to the details, you said that you put an extra constraint, that is that the experimentalist needs to have the same structure, like the two bipartite quantum states. So did you also prove that, for example, if you had a tripartite quantum state that points to all three, then this couldn't be achieved as well, or not?
Yes. So in this case, quite obviously, actually, the flag trick works, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you have a common state going to the three party, this common state will just carry a flag. And this is what I have proven before.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a common source going everywhere, then what we have proven is not valid anymore. So you have to accept the fact that it is possible to create independent systems. So if you say it's not possible to create independent systems, then you can explain everything with this flag trick, indeed.
Okay. So, okay, I understand. Thank you.
So I will also go back to it when I will discuss potential experiments. Okay, so I go a bit more in the detail, but not that much, right? I have some backup slides, so I can discuss it after. Remember we have two steps in our proof, right? The first one, which is to show that you need to introduce flags when you, to find an appropriate setup in which you can show that you need to introduce those flags, and then in which you are able to show that actually introducing those flag cannot work. So to do this, we combine two works. So the first one is, so this is self-testing. We used the notion of self-testing. So we introduced a first protocol, which is that one, so only between Alice and Charlie, in which we do three CHSH self-testing. So self-testing is just a notion in which when you accept the quantum mechanics formalism, you are able, just by looking at the probabilities, to infer, to deduce what are the states and the measurements which are performed by the party. So in that case, you just do violation in parallel of three different CHSH inequalities. And doing this, just by looking at the correlation in this scenario, you are able to deduce that it must be the state which is shared must be a Fibler state, and the measurement operators performed by Alice and Charlie must be sigma x, sigma y, sigma z for Alice up to this flag trick. Okay. And we combine this with a second work, which is a Bell state measurement self-testing, in which we are able to to show what is the measurement performed by Bob. We can show that Bob is performing a Bell stake measurement. And this is the way we can ensure that there is no entanglement introduced in those flag measurements, etc. And combining the two in a new experiment in which we keep this Alice Charlie part here, so we complexify a bit this and keep the Bell stake measurement in the middle, we obtain a challenge, right, which we show using self-testing results, which are a bit inspired from those two works, that actually there is no potential simulation. So to go like to describe concretely what is the experiment. So in this experiment, you see that I place some phi plus state between Alice and Bob, some phi plus state between Bob and Charlie. So this is just a maximally entangled state of 2 qubits. And then I ask Alice to make some standard Pauli measurements. And I ask also Charlie to make some standard Pauli measurements. So the idea is they just do the CHSH measurements and they use 3 symmetric version of CHSH. And with this, they cannot do anything. Okay, so I'm done with like the content of what we did. And now I want to discuss a bit potential experimental tests. Yes.
Just a simple question. Are you imagining this as being done in optics? Because you can't do the Bell state measurement resolving all 4 states in optics.
It's a very good question.
I don't know what the situation is for other particles, but there's a paper by, Lev Veidman showing another.
Yeah, so there is an experiment which was done with supraconducting qubits, right? And I will discuss it.
Okay.
And regarding this Bell state measurement, okay, I am aware of that and okay.
Okay.
Yes. I don't want to. Okay. Well, so let me first discuss experimental tests quite naively without knowing what can be done in practice, right? But quite naively, if you look at this independence hypothesis, actually it's quite problematic. So it's already problematic at the classical level because, you know, when we write this, we assume that those two states are independent, but classical randomness is everywhere. So you could imagine that there are some cosmic rays, right, which are hitting your two sources and creating correlations, introducing correlations in your two sources. And actually more than this, if you do some optical experiments, right, you will need to align your laser maybe or some stuff, right? And doing this, you will introduce correlations into the two sources, I guess, right? So this is problematic to perform the experiment and in order to be able to claim that, okay, this experiment is a fair realization of this protocol. But actually, we prove that in this case, it's fine. So if you have such a classical source of randomness, which is correlating the two states and maybe the measurement devices, it's fine. Our result is still valid. But then, of course, you could assume that you have more, that you have quantum memories effects, right? And that this would introduce some correlation between the two states. So then, of course, in that case, our result is not valid anymore. If this is the case, you cannot trust this anymore. Because you can just do this flag simulation. So in practice, how would you do this experiment with optics? So let us assume that you can do a full Bell state measurement in optics, which is not indeed not the case, right? But okay, let us assume this and discuss what it means, right? So you usually in optics, we use SPDC sources to create phi plus maximally entangled states, right? So in order to do this, we use a laser, we shine a crystal and the crystal emits 2 photons, which is our phi plus state. So, okay, if we don't have a lot of crystal and laser. What we could do is just to use the same crystal and the same laser and pump this crystal twice. And then the first emitted pair would be this source and the second emitted pair would be that source, right? But then you may say, okay, it's not good because in my crystal, I might have some memory effect. And between the emission of the first pair and the second pair, I have some quantum correlation. And actually, I'm not in this scenario, I'm in that scenario. So I don't want to accept that this is a valid experiment. So then, well, you could use the same laser, but two different crystals, right? And the same laser pumps the two different crystals. And you could say, okay, I'm doing this. But again, you can still say, okay, but actually maybe in my laser, I have some quantum fluctuations. And while pumping my two crystals, I'm introducing those quantum fluctuations into those two crystals. And then I'm back to that case. So if you want to fight against this, you could still use two lasers. Two lasers pumping two different SPDC sources, sending two pairs. But again, there is still an argument against this. You could say, okay, my two lasers are plugged on the same electricity supply, right? And in my electricity supply, I have some quantum fluctuations, which are introducing quantum fluctuations in the two sources, and I'm back to this case. So with this, I just want to show you that we introduce an hypothesis, which I think makes sense, which is the fact that you can prepare independent sources. But actually, in order to check that this hypothesis is satisfied experimentally, it's much more problematic and tricky than, for instance, what you assume when you assume space-like separation and no signaling in Bell experiment. Bell experiment, we synchronize the experiment, we put distance, and we are somehow fine. Here, there is no fundamental way to rule out this kind of explanation. Okay, so there is also the question of noisy experiment, of course. So actually, we introduce some relaxed theorem in which we can show that even if you don't have perfect correlation, you can still rule out real quantum theory. And this is feasible with optics. I mean, the number we obtain are feasible with optics up to this Bell state measurement problem. And actually also there is an experimental demonstration of this protocol, which was done only 2 months after we put our paper on the archive, but which is using supraconducting qubits. And in their experiment, they have those two sources which are really close one to the other on the same chip, right? So again, as I said, this, in order to disprove that you are in this kind of explanation, you just need to trust your experiment at some point, right? You need to introduce some, at some level, a bit of trust. You need to trust that your two sources are independent. So here in these supraconducting qubits, well, you could say, okay, actually they are too close to be independent, but again, it's always a debate, right? Okay, so I'm almost done in my talk, right? So just to conclude, what we have proven is that in some sense, quantum theory needs complex number, or more exactly that it doesn't work with real number when we understand it in terms of those axioms 1 to 4. There is an experimental witness of this up to this source independence problem, which is very tricky and okay, you need to put some trust in this. And maybe to go further this, you see that in our proof, we use those axioms which are really mathematical, so important historically, I think, but mathematical, right? And yeah, so one of my goals is to try to replace those axioms or some of those axioms by some more physically motivated axioms. So for instance, there are many derivation of this formalism for quantum theory. So There is this book from Dariano Chiribella and Perinotti, and I think it would be quite interesting to be able to obtain some more operational way to introduce this real and complex quantum number quantum theory. And beyond that also, we all know that Bell-like tests can reject local hidden variable models. Now we have found a test which is able to reject real quantum theory. So I think a very nice question is now to ask the question with like those kind of experiment, just trusting the probability distribution, the statistics of my experiment, can we reject more theories? And can we go until we reject all theories except quantum theory? So this would be very like great, I think. Okay, so I'm done with this. I thank my colleagues. So most of them are in Vienna. Tony Yassin is with me in Kassel Defels at ICFO. And Nicolas Gisin, my PhD advisor.
Thank you very much. So we have plenty of time for questions and discussion. So please, if anybody has a question, you can raise your hand. Okay, I'll take them in order. So I, Thomas.
Thanks. Yeah, so yeah, I guess maybe just to continue what I was saying before. So I agree that real quantum theory composes with the tensor product at the level of pure states, right? So you have some projective real space for your pure states, you take the tensor product. But at the level of the density matrices, so like symmetric matrices, I mean, to me, the saying that it's not tomographically local, real vector space quantum theory, is the same as saying that it doesn't compose with the tensor product. So yeah, I mean,
yes.
Would you agree with that, or am I maybe? Are we talking about like slightly different things?
So somehow I think we are talking about slightly different things. So what you call real quantum theory, I call it Stueckelberg real formalism of quantum theory. Or okay, I don't know how I want to name it, right? But so I mean, another way to describe it is just this universal qubit real quantum theory, in which you will just say that there is some rebit, right? Real qubit, which is accessible by everyone from like by everyone from everywhere directly, right? Mm-hmm. So it's exactly, it's a kind of flag simulation, right? So there is one flag accessible by everyone everywhere, which you manipulate to simulate this complex pi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess, yeah, I'm just thinking about this very, yeah, I guess the like general probabilistic theory corresponding to real vector space quantum mechanics, yeah, which doesn't have like these flags. They're literally just like, yeah, no symmetric matrices. But okay, I'll need to think about that some more. I might let other people ask.
But Stueckelberg formalism is exactly this, right? So the problem when you want to obtain exactly the same formalism but with real numbers, you need to drop this tensor product assumption of indeed. And what you will start to do is to say, when I have A and B, I need to take the symmetric space in this tensor product. And then, okay, you obtain a theory which is completely equivalent, right? So this is what I call Stueckelberg, even if Stueckelberg did not completely like did the whole description, right? But
okay. Okay, thanks.
Okay, Lucien, you can ask your question.
Okay, So it would seem that a classical theory, the classical probability theory, for example, is a subset of real Hilbert space quantum theory, yes. Just restrict to. And then there's a theorem that you can in quantum computing that you can simulate any quantum computer on a classical computer. You just need more time, I suppose. So then it would seem that you can simulate the complex case using real Hilbert space, just using that technique. So I'm wondering, are there assumptions in what you do? Like, is there a locality assumption or other assumptions in what you do that forbid that sort of approach?
So, yeah, well, there is locality, right? So it's when you say I can simulate quantum theory using a computer, a classical computer, of course, it's not true if you want to simulate a Bell experiment with like two computers, one for Alice, one for Bob, and replacing the source by a bit string, right?
Okay, so this is so the setup you have is enforcing a kind of locality.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's why it is. Okay. Good. Thank you.
Matthew.
Yeah. I am just struggling at the mathematical level how to understand where the difference in these two frameworks is coming from. Correct me if I'm wrong, but are you saying that yes, there is at the very fundamental level a Hilbert space isomorphism between Cn and R2n? And so for pure states, at least, these are equivalent. But then as soon as we introduce mixed states and density operators acting on that Hilbert space, that is where the difference comes in. And so density operators do not respect that Hilbert space isomorphism.
Yes, so it's true that you can always like replace all complex number by two real number, right? Two real numbers. And then when you make a product, you have to be very careful, etc. But here I'm talking about Hilbert spaces. And in Hilbert spaces, you have the scalars, right? It's a vector space, so you have the scalars. And of course, you will need to treat those numbers as scalars, right? But if you start to replace complex numbers by two real numbers, it starts to, okay, already at the mathematical level, it's not a Hilbert space anymore, right?
In what sense? Is it violating? Is the inner product not conserved? Is it not complete?
You need numbers, right? And if I take two real number, two real number is not a number. So
I'll think about it.
I mean, a way to answer the question is just if you go at the level of axiom 1 to 4, okay. Yeah, it doesn't work, right? If you want to say, okay, I replace all complex numbers by two numbers, right? X and Y, for instance, all Z by X and Y, then I don't obtain a Hilbert space, right? I start from the Hilbert space for a qubit, let's say, and now I have something which is not a Hilbert space anymore.
Okay, I think I see what you're trying to say. I'll have to work it out and see. Thank you.
So, Rob, you can ask your question.
Thanks. I just wonder if, so I'm familiar with this Stueckelberg's approach, and it just seems to me that maybe the approach that Tom was describing is distinct from Stueckelberg's approach, that there's maybe really three proposals on the table. The one you described, the one that Stueckelberg described, and then something else. So as I understand it, the Stueckelberg approach is sort of to observe that you can reproduce all the predictions of complex quantum theory if you just add one extra qubit and imagine that qubit is accessible from everywhere in space, right? Like just imagine that this sort of lives in a different dimension and everywhere in space you can access it. And now, you can get exactly the same predictions as complex quantum theory. If you use the right operators, the operators that you have in that theory aren't all the operators, but my impression is that there's this other option, which is more like saying every time I get two pairs of systems together, there's a kind of holism, that it's not just the properties of each individual system, but there's some additional properties of the pair. And that's, I can't access those properties. Like, Y tensor Y poly is real amplitude, but I can't build it up out of things that are real amplitude on the components. So that to my mind it sounds quite different from the Stueckelberg proposal. So I guess my question is, are you sure that these are the same? Because they feel different to me.
Yes. Well, so I looked into this, but now it's a bit less clear in my mind. But I read Stueckelberg notes, like from Geneva University. And I remember that he says that in order to describe a particle with real number, you need to introduce a Hilbert space plus an operator J, which will anti-commute with all operators, all measurement operators. So now, instead of introducing a Hilbert space for each system, right, you will introduce a Hilbert space plus J, no, sorry, which square to minus one. So you introduce H and an operator J over H with square to minus one. And from what I remember, Stueckelberg only did this. So it's, I think it's pretty easy to show that this is equivalent to this extra qubit, which is accessible from everywhere.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right. It's. I think the right thing to say would be something like complex quantum theory can be embedded into the real quantum theory with one extra qubit, so twice the dimension.
Yes.
Accessible from everywhere, together with this constraint, with the symplectic matrix.
Exactly. And then all the question is, how do you do this? So I guess at the time of Stueckelberg, they were not having this idea of independent systems like Bell, non-locality, stuff like this. We have it like, it's really clear for us now. So we directly start to ask those kind of questions. But I guess at his time, it was not really something they would like ask. But now the question is, how do you do when you have two particles? So you have system S with operator JS which square to minus one. And now you have system T with operator JT, which also square to minus one. And if you look at the joint system, how do you do this? And actually the way you do it is you will say, okay, I will take the subspace of the tensor of the Hilbert space on which my two operators J are the same. And this corresponds to taking this symmetric difference. Well, at least it's a way to look at it, but I think it's completely equivalent to this extra qubit accessible from everywhere. It's just two different ways to interpret or to mathematically write the same thing or, okay.
Well, let me just say, one of the ways in which it definitely feels different is that I think you'd agree that under Stueckelberg's proposal, it's operationally indistinguishable from complex quantum theory. Like, yes. Like if I say my picture of the world is that there's this one qubit that you can access, yes, from anywhere, and the only states and operators you can measure are those, yes, that have this commuting property with the J and that access,
yes,
then I'm not saying that there's any operational difference compared to, yes, a complex quantum theory. Mm-hmm. Whereas it seems to me that in the context of GPTs, when people talk about what if real quantum theory had been the theory of the world and local tomography failed, they really are imagining a foil to complex quantum theory, something that makes different predictions.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
That's what makes it seem that this can't possibly be Stueckelberg's proposal.
No, sorry. So what I did in my talk is not Stueckelberg's proposal.
No, I know, and it's also not what Tom was describing.
Yeah.
So this is why I say I think there's this third alternative, which is what Tom is describing.
So Thomas was saying, okay, you took this axiom number four, but you should take another axiom, right?
Okay. Yeah.
In which case, if you, of course, and this is completely compatible with what I did, of course, right? If you change this axiom four and say, okay, you should do something else, then of course my conclusions are not valid anymore. So what Tomasz was saying is that if you change axiom four and now you say, okay, actually the Hilbert space corresponding to S and T is not anymore the tensor product, but it is this symmetric subspace, then you are back to something which is actually completely equivalent to this extra qubit. So it works because now it is operationally equivalent to standard quantum theory, complex number quantum theory. So I'm just saying that if you modify axiom four, then my result is not valid anymore, right? And there are good ways to modify this axiom four in order to obtain something which is completely equivalent to standard quantum theory.
Okay, well, we should stop talking. I'm not yet persuaded that there isn't a third proposal, but let's leave it to later. Thanks very much.
All right, so we have a question from TC.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. First off, that was excellent. Thank you very much. There's something I'm interested in a lot of stuff, but this last question where you ask, can we reject more theories, or mainly this sort of hierarchy that you've sort of semi-sketched out here, where you say how if you're just concerned with Bell-like tests with single sources, it's enough to rule out the kind of local hidden variable models. But then what you've shown here, and one thing I take away is that if you're interested in, say, a larger set of experiments where you have multiple independent sources, and you can rule out a larger class of theories. So I'm interested, is this what you imagine for, suppose somebody else comes along and says, okay, I've got a different way of setting up a mathematical model for explaining the statistics of an experiment, just only uses real numbers. Is your idea for this that you just need to go to a sufficiently intricate sort of operational commitment about the network structure of your experiment, and that imposes different algebraic constraints? Like for example, a lot of what has been talked about is, so as soon as you have this operational commitment of preparation independence, then how do you model that on the mathematical theory? Clearly you need some kind of, binary relation about composition. Maybe it's the tensor product, maybe it's some other thing that's not a tensor product. So my question would be, maybe suppose you have three independent sources, whatever that product is in some alternative theory, it better be associative because it's kind of operationally associative. So I'm just wondering what your thoughts are for the scheme for rejecting more theories.
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's really not clear for me. I don't know how to answer to this question, because it's something I started to think about, right? And it's not clear for me. So a difficulty I see also is that if you want to do something which is only operational, then in the end, you cannot expect to find this precise formalism of quantum theory. You will not find Hilbert spaces and stuff like this, because you should find all potential equivalent formalization of quantum theory. So you will also find Bohmian mechanics, you will find this Tückelberg formalism, everything, right? And I guess in order to find a way to handle this mathematically, I guess it's too hard. So at some point, at least to start with, you need to introduce some postulate at the level of, no operational postulate, but more something you want, right? But it's not an answer to your question, but I don't know what to answer.
I wasn't expecting. I'm just interested in what your thoughts were, because I it's certainly a vague and abstract question, yeah. But I appreciate the answer. Thank you.
So we have a question by Tom.
Yeah, maybe I'll wait for people who haven't answered ask questions, and then I'll ask at the end.
Okay, then Matthew, it's your turn.
My question is about Tom's question. First of all, Mark, thanks for the talk. I just want to make sure that, right, so there's at least three variants of real quantum theory floating around. I want to make sure that I understand precisely what the set of bipartite states looks like according to your axioms. So there's this difference between the vector space tensor product of the real symmetric matrices and then their algebraic tensor product. As Thomas points out, for rebits, there's one extra dimension you get from and as Rob said, that's the sigma y tensor sigma y. So in your theory, the cone of bipartite states, what does it look like? Is it the positive cone of Is it the positive cone of, right, and what does it look like?
So a bipartite state, I mean, the density matrix representing a state of two particles, right, one S, one T, is any positive matrix of trace one in this Hilbert space, which is the tensor product of the two Hilbert spaces.
So another way of asking the question is, what is the dimension of the composite of two real systems in your theory?
The product of the dimensions.
Okay. It's very different.
Yeah. But okay. Somehow you start to talk about dimension, but if you take a device independent picture, right, all dimensions are infinite. I mean, nobody can prepare a state of finite dimension. It's this is what I believe, right?
Well, I couldn't say, but you've answered my question, so thank you.
Ellie, it's you.
Yeah, so I was interested in the inequality that you derived, where you showed that there's an inequality which has an upper bound on, if you assume real quantum theory. And my understanding from your paper is that you were using sort of a special variant of NPA where you could impose the sort of realness. And specifically what you're doing is you're imposing that on the marginal density matrix over parties A and C, which if there is shared randomness, it is a separable state. But if everything is real, then it is invariant under partial transpose. So this the marginal on AC, if you take the partial transpose on C, it's equal to itself. And then you can sort of encode that by saying that your moment matrix is built on these marginals, because you consider these sort of the post-selected moment matrix on rho AC for every value of B. And then you say when you sum over all possible values for B, so you take the sum of these post-selected moment matrices, then you get something which should be invariant under partial transpose, yes, which is a really nice creative thing. So my question is, what if we didn't do it with this sort of creative approach and tried to use something like quantum inflation, which is a sort of a generic algorithm for testing compatibility with a network? What would it look like to say, here is a variant of quantum inflation, which assumes real quantum physics? And so it would not involve introducing sort of post-selected moment matrices. It would just be sort of the whole thing. And it occurs to me that what you could do there is you could say, for any moment in the moment matrix, if you take an inflation of the bilocality scenario, so long as the moment does not involve any operators for B, so if it's some sequence of operators for Alice and some sequence of operators for Charlie, that you could take the partial transpose on the operators. So you could essentially take the sequence on just Charlie, reorder them, and under the assumption that the marginal state is invariant of partial transpose, then you have this equality between moments in the moment matrix. Yes. Did you sort of consider this and reject it as like it would be too hard to sort of get anything valuable out of it? Because I mean, I sort of agree with you that if you can impose that the actual density matrix is invariant or partial transpose, that's much better than sort of like these secondary implications. Yes. But yes. Could you do that?
Okay. So the way we found the result was analytical first, right? And then from the analytical argument, we try to find something. And this is why we did this like precise witness, right? It's really derived from the analytical result we have with no noise. So this is why we did this. And then, we found the analytics because we were thinking in terms of flag, it's exactly what I explained, right? How to make this flag trick impossible. I know this self-test, I know that self-test, I try to combine, etc. And then I also know that Tony and Miguel tried a lot a few years ago to do, I guess, something which is what you said, but I guess a bit more at random, right? Without knowing what specific experiments, what specific protocol to consider. And they didn't find anything, right? So, but of course, by chance, they could have done that, right? So I don't know what to answer, right? So a priori, why not? In practice, they tried, they didn't manage it, but maybe with luck, doing something else, they would have found something. Okay. So for sure, you need, you know that when you do the inflation, et cetera, you need to look at correlations in which you believe that the three direction X, Y, and Z, if you use qubits, are important, right? So you will not look only at CHSH-like correlations. You need to introduce more. So, but this is quite obvious. But then, okay.
Thanks. So Tom, now there's nobody else, so you can ask again the question.
Thanks. Yeah. This is more a bit of a different question. I was wondering if you could, it's about the old tilde map, right? So you kind of encode kind of quantum systems into real, to like symmetric matrices, so real vector space quantum systems. And so your expression for rho AB tilde, maybe it's easier to go to it. That one. So I was curious. So if I take rho AB, so if I decide to encode a product state, so rho A tensor rho B, I get rho A tensor rho B tensor II plus, you know, rho A tensor rho B star tensor minus I minus I. And this is different than if I'd taken the tilde map on the individual systems, right? So if I had done rho A tilde tensor rho B tilde.
Yeah, it's okay.
And is that problematic? Because it seems like it's depending on when I do the simulation, it doesn't really respect the kind of composition, right?
Yeah. Well, but this is one recipe to make the simulation, but somehow the experimentalist does what he wants, right? So you give him a first experiment, he simulates it in some way, and you give a second one, he will maybe use another way, etc., right? So this is, of course, I mean, for our result, this is something I could even not have talked about this, right? I could have said, okay, take this experiment with three parties and do this NPA hierarchy, and you find that, okay, it cannot work. But it's important to understand that. But it's true that this way to simulate has some incoherences. So indeed, if you start to do what you just said, you will see some differences, right?
Also, just because of what Ellie mentioned with the like this partial transpose criteria for real separable. So with this simulation, right, I could take rho A and rho B, no, rho A tensor rho B as like real matrices, and then if I do the simulation, I'd get a non-separable state, or right, if I have rho A tensor rho B II plus rho A tensor rho B minus I, that would be not separable, right? Because no, it would. Actually,
well, the flag part is not, or
the flag part is not, right?
Yes.
Okay, so that's kind of mapping a product quantum state to some like non-separable real. Okay, thanks.
So Ellie, do you still have a question, or no? Okay, so Rob, you can go.
Back to me. Okay. The way I like to think about the Stueckelberg trick is that it's a bit like quantum reference frames, that and ultimately the universal qubit is like the system that is the reference frame for the direction of time. And then you have a twirling operation, which is a mixture of identity and complex conjugate, which is time reversal. And so you can sort of think of it from the perspective of quantum reference frames and just either make your reference frame internal or external, and that's shifting between complex and real representation. Now, okay, so now the trick that you describe is more, let's not make that qubit universal, but let's think of it as something that's shared between parties. It's physical. So Alice and Bob share a qubit, mm-hmm. You know, Bob and Charlie share a qubit, that sort of thing. But there is a point in your talk where instead of doing what you're doing on the slide that's presently showing, where you did it at the coherent level. You did what in the quantum reference frame case I would call coherent twirling rather than incoherent twirling. You took pure quantum states and you tensored on a ket I rather than factorizing on a projector onto I. Yeah, I think it's one of these. No, not this one.
No.
Oh, am I wrong? Yeah.
I think actually you can do the two, because so somehow when you do these kind of simulations, I hope I'm not saying something wrong.
If you go far enough back, there was a place we had a psi and a psi star. Keep going back, and I think we'll.
Introduce it later. So,
you were talking about the psi ket, and then.
Because at some point I was doing it and I removed it everywhere. So maybe I did this, but I should not have done
it. I thought I saw the coherent version. That's strange.
The coherent version is interesting. So again, I thought about it and I hope I will not say anything wrong now because it was quite a while ago. But when I do this, right? The simulation, Alice and Bob, the first thing they do is to measure the flag. Okay. So somehow, if you take again the complex point of view, right, you have a flag measurement, which is like the P of M, which is diagonal in those two flags, right, which commutes with all measurements which are performed by Alice and Bob. So if it commutes with all measurements which are performed by Alice and Bob, you could directly measure it on the state, right, before sending the state. So those coherences, when Alice and Bob are doing this kind of measurement in which they first measure the flag, are irrelevant somehow because all measurement operators commute with the corresponding flag measurements.
Okay, well, that answers my question, because I was wondering if anything was riding on doing it coherently, and the answer is no, you can do it all incoherently.
Yes.
So in essence, your trick just is Stueckelberg's trick, but where the qubit is not universal, it's physical, and it's depending on the sources. Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. Thanks.
I can take now some of the questions that were written in the chat. Some of them are kind of philosophical. The first one by Charlie Cummings, I think, has been asked and answered, or closed variants of this question. But Haoxing is asking, in what sense is the real quantum theory the same as normal quantum theory? So why should we be surprised that it's not equivalent to the usual complex quantum theory?
So actually, you know, this simulation was found by Nicolas Gisin and, I don't remember. Well, anyway, this simulation was found maybe 20 years ago and at that time people said, okay, so there is this simulation, Bell experiment is all what you can try to do device independently. And this is the end of the story. So actually there is always a way to simulate real quantum theory, to simulate classical complex quantum theory using real quantum theory for as regards experiments in which we just look at the correlations. So, given this, it's not so obvious that the two theories should be different, because during 20 years, people thought that they were, okay, at some level the same, right? Yeah, and then I don't know what to say more, right? It's not so obvious also, because before that, right, to try to say, oh, no, but I don't want real number, I think that most arguments were around either dimension, but again, if you want to say something device independently, you cannot use this, of course, or with local tomography, right? And well, then we prove that local tomography is not needed, right? So of course we introduce a bit more than just a standard Bell experiment. We introduce independence of sources, right? So this is the to be discussed part, right? But given this, if you accept that you can prepare independent systems, we prove that local tomography is not needed.
Yeah, well, to me sounds like a good answer. I will assume that it is satisfactory. There's another one by Hilary C.
I'm not sure that's really a question. It's more of a kind of side debate.
Right.
I'm concerned that, you know, maybe are we sure we're not making a category error here of conflating physical reality with the mathematical constructs that we use to describe it? I mean, you know, so Hilbert spaces don't apply. Fair enough. Let's think up some other structure. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, physicists have done that for years. Like we, Dirac invented delta functions, and then mathematicians came along and cleaned it up later. And the reason why we have complex numbers in the first place is because some mathematician, was it Galois, was exasperated about not being able to solve x squared plus 1 equals 0. So he just defined the imaginary unit to be the solution. So yeah, I'm concerned that we might have a category error here, but unfortunately that I haven't got that to a sharp question to actually ask.
No. So, well, it's a good question, right? And this is what I said in the end of the talk, right? So we consider those four axioms, 1 to 4, which are, as you say, really mathematical. So for historical reason, right, it's still very interesting for sure, right? I mean, this formalism is important for historical reason. Then is it important beyond just those reason? Well, so I think it is because there are some derivation of this formalism from some principles. So there is this book from Dariano, Kiribella, and Perinotti, in which they really have like physical principles, right? It's not mathematical axioms, and they obtain this kind of formalism. So, but yeah, I think to really like be sure that this is important, it's also important to try to understand this more with physical principle and less mathematical axioms. I don't know if this is an answer.
Well, like I said, I wasn't sure that what I was asking was a question, so
okay.
Good talk, by the way. Excellent talk.
Thanks a lot.
So I think there's one last question maybe from the chat. So it's about the analogy between Bell inequalities and this result of yours. And Anna feels that in the one case of Bell inequalities, what we're testing is a physical property. Well, in this case, it's a mathematical framework. So,
yes, well,
someone uneasy about this.
Okay, I have a dangerous answer, and maybe I should have thought a bit more before saying this, but okay, let me say it. Somehow with Bell inequalities, you still, Well, no, but I agree a bit with the question, and it's linked to what I have said, right? So it would be good to have an operational and more from physical principle way to formalize those axioms or something which gives this, right?
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, we've been asking you questions for a long time already. So I think we should end at least.
So actually, I saw that Marina said what I wanted to say somehow, right? So you are also testing something which is mathematical, which is a local hidden variable model, right? So,
I guess you could say the hidden variables are kind of a metaphysical or something of that nature, right? There's some kind of,
yes,
it corresponds to an intuition about, yes, how things ought to be.
Exactly.
And,
so this
and
is
real
the problem we have.
Hilbert spaces don't really. Right?
Exactly. This is the problem we have with quantum theory, indeed.
Yeah, so the quantum theory itself has this problem. So we shouldn't expect real quantum theory to be less problematic than quantum theory, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, let's thank again Marc-Olivier for the talk.